I can get weird. We can just get weird. Let's put that list.
Butterscotch
Shenanigans. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Coffee with Butterscotch, the official podcast of Butterscotch Shenanigans. We are a three-brother video game studio. I'm Seth.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Sam.
You can find our games over at games.bscotch.net. We also have a great community at forums.bscotch.net, so head over there and show us some love. And all of our questions and a lot of our content for the podcast comes from podcast.bscotch.net. So if you want to get involved in this little dance party, you know, head on over there and shake your pelvis around, and we'll see what happens. This show is not for anyone under the age of young. If you're young, stop listening.
We established a while ago that Seth needs to complete his sentences, otherwise you end up having the inverse meaning we want.
Yeah, yeah. Sentence completion has always been a problem of mine. But we were talking earlier about the fact that we have a family tradition of interrupting each other.
Sorry, what were you saying? I had an idea.
So, I maybe wonder if, you know, maybe I've grown out of the habit of finishing my own sentences because I just don't need to.
Right.
Most of the time.
Probably true.
Passive aggression.
All right.
Okay. So what's been happening? Sam tried something.
It works.
Interesting.
It works. So
what works? What are you talking about?
Well, okay. So, you know, we're pushing up on this Crashlands internal or actual beta deadline. That is
actual beta. It's different than
a fake beta.
An imaginary beta, which is what we did a couple months back, I think.
And we're pushing up on this internal fake deadline that we established for some reason in October, and so we're trying to, you know, get all the work done. And there's a few things left on my plate in particular, which is finishing all the bosses and then finishing all the story stuff for the bog and the tundra.
Those are the second and third biomes in the game.
And
also
so,
known as the second and third chapters or acts or whatever.
And so I thought, you know, I need to be able to put in like a day and a half a day, but also not crazy.
Like, that's impossible.
This is classic Sam math.
So
I need to get 2 days per day.
So what I started doing last Wednesday, and it worked really well for 3 days, which I think is an accomplishment. is that I'd wake up at 5 or 6 in the morning and then basically get a full work day in by noon.
Yeah. Full day work day of 6 hours, which, as we all know, is actually
a
work day.
It is actually a full work day.
Because the last 2 hours, nobody gets shit done.
Exactly. So once my brain started turning off, which is always about around hour 6, I would take lunch and then take a nap for an hour. Wake up, work again for another 3 or 4 hours, and then take another break and eat dinner. And then go to a cafe and work again for another 3 or 4 hours, finishing work around 10. And what this allowed me to do was basically get a day and a half in every day of work, which means that over the course of a 7-day work week,
you get 14 days of work in.
Exactly. Which is 2 weeks worth of work. Which
Holy.
Is actually.
But you only did it for 3 days.
Well, no. I did it over the weekend. So I did it over the weekend. Okay. I was just like slowly getting more and more tired. So I guess I did it from Wednesday to Sunday.
Wednesday. Yeah.
And I did a good job. Sunday went furniture shopping with the lady. Got super tired during that, so, you know, came back home, went to bed.
I mean, to be fair, you still don't have that much blood.
I also am recovering from a stem cell transplant.
I mean, that is true. That is a thing that's happening.
It's a true fact. But, so what happened yesterday is I woke up and I couldn't feel awake, if that makes sense. I drank a lot of coffee. I just didn't feel like I had anything.
Did you say
anything.
You drank a noggin and nothing happened?
Yeah, drinking, which never happens.
You just drank it and you were just like, all right, might as well have been milk.
I chugged a noggin and nothing happened, and I just couldn't get out of this weird funk. I can't remember if it was you or someone suggested, they're like, maybe it's because you just worked, you know, 12 hours a day for five days. Maybe you
well,
should
so
take a rest.
Yeah,
this is an interesting lesson that Sam keeps being determined to forget. Is that your
time
brain,
is precious. We're all gonna die.
Time is precious, but here's the thing: your brain runs out.
Yeah, it has like a finite amount of juice.
Well, that's just it. Just runs out.
But that's where the regularly scheduled naps come in.
Yeah, I mean,
also
every
sugar cookies in there.
Yeah, I mean, an hour nap isn't enough to refill your brain juice.
You know,
through your day, the juice is just leaking out.
But
of
the
your body.
The crazy thing about it was that 1 hour nap that I was taking in the afternoon somehow was making it so. So Adam and Seth both have a really hard time falling asleep.
True fact.
They can't get their brains to shut up, and I've always made fun of them for this. But I think part of it's doing programming.
Yeah.
Programming for some reason makes your brain just gets high and it can't shut up.
Programming fills the subconscious part of your brain with all kinds of logic problems, and your brain is just starts churning on them all the time.
And so
pop up in your head while you're trying to fall asleep.
A lot of the stuff I've been doing has been story work, but that is actually, because of the creator tool, it's actually sort of a very high level form of programming.
Mm-hmm. It is programming.
Yeah. It is programming. And so even though I was taking this hour nap, which seemed like very little time to me, but I'd wake up, felt great, able to get work done, but then I couldn't go to bed. It was actually what happened.
Now so you know.
I'd lay in bed at 10 after working for 12 hours and like having a full day starting at 5, and I couldn't go to bed until like 1. Yeah. It was infuriating.
Yeah, now that's
welcome to our lives.
My life.
I don't know how you do it.
To the life of programming.
It's hellacious.
The way that I do it is I feel like shit most of the time.
It's a bold strategy.
Cotton, let's see if it pays off.
See if that pays off. It doesn't pay off.
It does
not. So I'm going to have another double day today. I'll be going to the, I don't learn lessons. So I'm
well, this reminds me of Sam's Uberman experience, which I think we talked about in an earlier podcast where Sam attempted
to not sleep, basically.
In summary, he attempted to sleep for 2 hours a day in 20-minute nap chunks.
It
interspersed every 4 hours.
Really dumb.
It does.
But it was. Well, I didn't die or anything.
Yeah, well, there you go. I guess it was a good idea.
So if anybody has noticed, I've had a mild obsession with time usage even way before I was almost killed by cancer. Yeah. So it's probably worse now.
I've noticed, though.
It was better after the cancer stuff until, like, just a few days ago.
Well, yeah, it's because I got back to...
got back out of the hospital.
Well, yeah, and I think now you're like, now that I'm totally done with treatment anymore. Yeah, you're like, well, I guess I better stop
back to
and
the
just
old ways.
Try and do enjoy
I think,
my
though,
life.
No, I mean, I think maybe this is a weird thing, but I think it's partially a symptom of being young. So Sam's the youngest by a few years.
He's a symptom of the disease we call youth.
But I remember in my early 20s, I felt like, man, I have so many things I have to do and I just have no fucking time.
Yeah.
And I was just going and going and going. But now that I'm, you know, in my late 20s, nearing 30.
Life is a babbling brook.
Yeah, I'm like, eh. Whatever. I've done enough things. I'm done doing things now.
I've embraced the fact that there are way more things that I want to do and, you know, experience than are just possible in a lifetime. Now I'm just like, well, I'm just gonna keep doing the stuff that needs to get done, and at some point that stuff will be done, and then I'll do the next thing, and that's just how life is, basically.
I've embraced that in the sense that I'm holding on to
it. In the sense that you're battling it every day.
Yeah.
You've embraced it in a death.
I'm pretty sure that means you're battling it.
Battle is a form of embrace.
Yeah. So anyway, we've been busting our humps. If you haven't picked up on that,
practically a camel at this point.
Sam's got
a
16
broken
or
camel.
30 humps going. It's actually a leprosy. He's covered in.
I do have a rash. In my
Oh yeah. Hey, he's got a giant rash.
Is that bad? Is it still there? Or is it going away?
It's
actually
back. Pretty much gone away. It's back.
It's
back. Nice.
It's back rash.
It's pretty
bad.
Much gone away. I didn't have to put anything on it last night. Just went to bed.
Nice.
Don't even give a shit anymore.
Yeah. So then, otherwise, we got some terrible news about our iOS games.
Yep. Which, for the record, we thought
we were all clear, but here's what's happening. iOS 9 is coming out soon.
Well, it's tomorrow? Already rolling out, sort of slowly.
Oh shit! Yeah. It's rolling out. It's slurping its way across the nation,
and the world.
So I was like, oh, well, I better make sure that our games are working on iOS 9, because in the past, our experience tells us that new versions of iOS make our games break. So I booted up our games on my handy-dandy iPod 5, and everything ran smooth as butter.
Which we were all rejoicing because...
We were all like, this is impossible.
Because this means that Seth doesn't have to take time off from Crashlands to fix all the iTunes stuff.
And so we were like, yay!
That's it was very Wookiee-like.
So we did that, and then we moved on. We started working on Crashlands, and then we got a report from somebody saying, hey guys, I just updated to iOS 9.
It was an iPhone 5S.
Which apparently is different from an iPod 5. Because, Somehow. Because the game crashes when on boot up, unless it's booted up with the phone held horizontally with the home button on the right.
Yeah, and then I was meeting up with some friends, one of whom had an iPhone 6S. And I was like, well, I'm going to boot it up and see if it's the same thing here. And it didn't work that orientation either. But I tried all four orientations, and that one actually lets you boot it upside down vertically.
So you just take your phone, open Flop Rocket, turn it upside down.
But there's yet another, iPads don't boot in any orientation.
iPads don't boot at all. But once you boot it up, upside down, you can then rotate the phone.
Yeah, then it works fine.
Then it plays.
So
I think the S stands for
sometimes.
Suck my dick, this isn't going to work.
Right. Sometimes.
But yeah, so that means if you are currently on an iDevice and are not yet on iOS 9, everything's going to work fine. If you're updating to iOS 9, be aware that either the game won't work or you're going to need to try all four orientations to boot any of our games.
We aren't saying don't update to iOS 9 because Apple wouldn't like us to say that.
Probably.
But just be thoughtful about your life decisions.
Just be aware of what's going to happen.
And we will be fixing it, but that leads to
this leads to the next problem.
The most comical problem.
So we use Game Maker Studio to make our games.
Wait, can I just say there's that rule of bad things coming in threes, you know?
What's the third one?
But I just want to put it.
Okay, so this is the second thing. So we figured out this iOS 9 thing and we were like, ah, damn it. So I started looking into what I needed to do to get our games working. Turns out what I need to do is update Game Maker to the latest version.
Easy, right?
No problem. Do it all the time. So I download it, I install it, and it's not working. And I'm like, huh, I've had this problem before. Maybe all I need to do is go into my installation directory, clear out everything, all my old files, do a fresh install. So I do, and my license information is lost. Which is pretty normal, right? Just gotta re-register. Yeah, just gotta re-register my copy. No problem. So I re-register my copy, and nothing happens. I'm like, oh, that's odd. Maybe they changed their licensing or something. I go to their website, put in my email address, say, hey, send me a new license. Nothing shows up. Hmm. And I'm like, well, this is odd. So I can do some more. Turns out, Game Maker has a big sale going on. Game Maker Studio is in the Humble Bundle right now for $12 for Studio, which is $150 normally, plus the Android module, which is $300 normally.
It's $500 down to $12.
Yeah, yeah. So you get like a 98% discount,
which is ridiculous.
So now people who have been like, maybe I want to do it, but now they're just like, oh yeah, and they're just like diving on this thing like vultures on a corpse. Mm-hmm. This has basically resulted in a DDoS-style attack on Yo-Yo Games, this game maker company, on their server, and nobody can register their copies of Game Maker.
Yeah.
Which means we can't patch for iOS 9 until the shitstorm subsides from their Humble sale. And it's still going on.
Well, not only that, but yeah, it's a week-long sale, but then because, I mean, it's not working for anybody. So they're going to have this huge backlog of people to push through it. And so it's going to be another probably half week or something on top of that.
Yeah, but we have no idea.
Maybe that third item was the fact that the news update they put up yesterday basically said the structure of their database was such that they actually could not handle the influx of people.
Well, that's what they admitted. They had a blog post up explaining the problem. And the problem was literally... whoever designed our database years ago did a terrible job. We actually kind of knew this because we'd had a little bit of trouble in the past, but it was never a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, when you're selling a product for $150...
Yeah, and then somehow we didn't expect, even though we were basically giving this thing away for free, and it's not just that they're giving you Game Maker Studio and the Android porting module for $12... They also are giving you a whole bunch of indie games that were made in Game Maker.
And the source code.
And the source code.
Many of which come with source code, so you can actually use it as a way to learn it.
We were asked to be in that, by the way.
Yeah, that's true.
But we said no. We said
nope.
Because all of our B-Scotch ID proprietary stuff is in there, and it would make it very easy to hack us if we we put that out there.
Yeah, so, but somehow they didn't expect the just the sheer volume that they ended up getting, which is funny to, I don't know why they wouldn't expect that that's the volume they would get. Or I guess, or whoever was in charge of making that happen wasn't aware of the fact that their database was poorly designed. So anyway, the issue now is that we're stuck, and for them, while their database is live, apparently they haven't found a way to just, you know, fix it on the fly.
Yeah. And I mean, we know from firsthand experience that if you make a mistake like that on a live online component of something, it is not fun or easy to fix.
It's hard to fix. But on the other hand, we haven't had something yet crash this hard, because for them, it's literally disabled. Like, it doesn't, it's not serving any purpose. So they might as well take it offline for just like a couple days and fix it, you know,
redo it
because it's literally serves no purpose right now. Anyway.
Yeah.
So that's out of our control.
So that's where we are. We have to wait until we can get patched up. So bad timing all around, but what are you going to do?
But we do have something else really cool coming up.
Yeah.
Which is in no way like a DDoS.
So this is the combo breaker that breaks the rule of threes.
And this is the St. Louis Scatter Jam, which, for those of you who aren't familiar, we are super into game jams. It's how our studio was formed. It's pretty much how we make all of our new games and ideas.
Sam, what is a game jam?
And a game jam is essentially a 48-hour game building event where you get a theme on Friday, and then you have to deliver a demoable game by Sunday afternoon, Sunday night. And you do this in front of a crowd, too. So it's not just like, oh, I'm in my cave. You show up and you sort of give this little presentation for 2 minutes on the terrible, terrible thing that you made over the course of 2 weeks.
on the mutant, the hideous mutated beast you made.
But it's an extremely empowering thing, and it's actually how Seth and I got started, and then how we find most of our game ideas. And with Adam, we made Narwhal Online for the last St. Louis Scatter Jam, for example. So that's coming up. That's the October, was it 7th?
9th. October 9th.
October 9th weekend.
So two weeks from this Friday.
And it'll be at the St. Louis Zoo, which is awesome. So it went really well yesterday. Last year, we had 144 people, I believe. 35 teams made it all the way through. And
which means 35 games came out of that weekend.
Yeah, so we're anticipating this one to be even bigger. And the zoo was super excited. I mean, everybody wanted a piece of it, apparently, this year. So the zoo will be putting it on. So if you're within like a, you know, like a 3 to 6 hour sort of travel range.
Or just less than six.
Or just less than six. it's true. Yeah, if you're within an hour.
Or are further away and feel like going.
Yeah.
Just come.
You can gather a team together. All you really need is a programmer and someone who can claim to do art. I say that because that's how we
get started. But you got 2 weeks to pick up a free copy of Inkscape.
And just also, start. You can get GameMaker, apparently, for you can like get Game $5.
Well, no, you can't.
You should still go buy GameMaker right now if you think that at all you want to do it. Because eventually, I mean, it's cheap as dirt. Like, it's okay if you have to wait for a week to actually get it, you know. It's not going to hurt you any. But if you do get it before then yeah, you'll have a week or so to prepare.
Yeah, and GameMaker has a ton of tutorials in it as well, so you can just pop into those and play around with it, and they teach you everything you need to know.
And
so,
the cool thing is Seth will be there. We'll be making a game for it. I won't be there because I'm not allowed to basically go out in public because of how hideous I've become from the stem cell transplant.
Yeah.
And I won't be there because I'll still be in Dallas.
But Seth will be repping the B-Scotch pretty hard.
That's
so
right. Yeah, and I mean, we didn't know this in advance, but apparently the stem cell transplant turns you into Quasimodo.
Yeah. But I have a hunchback, which happens to be covered in an itchy rash.
It's an itchy, rashy, humpy back.
That's what I'm trying to work off with my double day strategy.
Yeah.
You know, so, bust that hump. To bust
but
it
with
right
a good,
off.
I mean, with a good dietary regimen of like spinach smoothies and stuff, you'll be able to, he'll be reverted back to his normal self. So, that's all. You know, there's a lot of stuff happening.
Mm-hmm. Although we should probably mention some practical details of that thing. So one of them is that you can go learn about it at stlscatterjam.com.
That's right.
Yes.
And the other one is that it's called a scatter jam because, unlike a lot of game jams, you don't stay in the same place for that 48-hour period. you'll show up at the beginning and you'll meet with your group, and there'll be like a probably a performance of some sort, and people will talk about the details of the thing.
Well, actually, I think Fat Bard.
Fat Bard did it last time. I think he's doing it this time, right?
Yeah. So the guy, there's a couple guys who do all of our sound effects and our music for Crashlands, and they will be there playing music at the Scatter Jam.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So you can meet the music.
Last year, they actually played the Crashlands theme song on guitar,
which is cool, but nobody knows it.
Everyone's like, what the hell is this? This is Zelda?
This is the problem with promoting an unreleased game. But
nobody knows.
So if you're going to go to it, you're going to need to find a place to stay.
Airbnb is amazing.
Yeah, use Airbnb. Otherwise, it's not like a big event weekend or anything otherwise, mm-hmm. so hotels should be not too bad. And the event is free, too. So all you need to do is just cover a place to stay and food.
Is there no registration cost?
Nope. No registration cost.
Never is. None of all the St. Louis Game Jam based things are all free.
Yeah. And we were talking about this earlier, that it would be really cool if we could, sort of try to boost up the St. Louis Game Jams a little bit by broadcasting to all of our players and fans. Like, hey guys, come take part in these. It'd be really cool. So we want the Butterscotch community to be repped at these things.
Yep. So we'll grab a buddy and show up.
Make some games.
Grab a buddy, grab some Red Bulls and Noggins and booze and have Jaeger bombs and make some games. okay, so that's all of our general news. What's happening with Crashlands?
What is happening with Crashlands?
Well, so in order to get this fat baby out the door.
It's so fat. We're doing a cesarean.
We have... Yeah,
it's the only way.
We have basically one thing that we've changed about launch.
Which, by the way, we were all fat babies. We had to be delivered that
That's
way.
True.
Poor mom had basically had a zipper installed.
Good she God. Definitely should have.
Yeah.
It was a lot easier.
Yeah, we would have made, yeah.
But the Crashlands creator, which is the sort of modding tool that we built, really the design tool that we built, the back end that allows us to do all the story building and stuff, we were actually going to be adding that into general public availability post-game launch. And the reason for that is that that'll allow us to, if we don't have to worry about that up front, that'll allow us to get the game out the door much faster, on the order of like 4 to 6 weeks.
Yeah, so the thing works perfectly fine. It's just not...
It's ugly.
It's not user-friendly.
It's ugly, and it's not user-friendly, which are two things that are unacceptable for making public. And so what that means is just that in order to release it, it needs to look nice, but it's going to take a few weeks to make it look nice, and there's too much other stuff to do to actually get the game done first. So our option would basically be to get the game done and then finish that and then launch everything. Or get the game done and launch it and then finish that and add it in a patch.
Yeah. And that'll also allow us to, if there's any cool content, things we think of in the meantime, whatever else, to kind of bundle those together for a cool.
Yeah.
And it gives us plenty of time to basically beta the game by itself.
And then beta
the creator. So those of you who really are pumped about the creator and want to get in on it, you'll be able to pre-creator patch.
Yeah, we'll probably... testing. So. Yeah. We don't know any details yet, but unlike the beta for Crashlands, which would be very closed and relatively small, the beta for the creator will probably just be increasing in size, and people who want to get involved and can find the link probably will be able to jump in.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of the issues that we need to work out are things like how well the server can handle that kind of load, so we'll want to slowly bring people in and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're really into that idea, you probably will be able to get into it when the game launches anyway.
Yeah.
But it just won't be publicly
available. Yeah. So the cool thing about this is then Adam has gotten to become an enhancement shaman.
And the enhancement shaman role is essentially one in which you become the thing that allows everybody else to be extremely awesome by being extremely awesome yourself.
You accelerate everyone's workflow.
Yeah. So, as I said, the biggest problem, the biggest potential bottleneck that we're coming up against is the fact that there's so much story to do, and I also have to do the bosses. Previously, I was doing the story as well. And so, if I'm able to offload a good chunk of that onto Adam while these bosses get finished up, then we will slicken the path to victory.
So if the story goes from the beginning to a very lighthearted tone to an extremely morbid one, you can blame him. Because he's the one who took it.
Which one it is, though.
Yeah. He's the one who took it that direction.
But so once I finish up the bosses, then I'll be hopping back on the story train to do, either depending on where we're at with Adam's work over the past couple days and the next couple days. So that's super cool because that bumps up our timeline again by something like days, maybe even weeks. So
yeah,
awesome job.
But again, we also have this iOS thing. Once we can patch that, then we're gonna lose some time. But anyway, we're moving, and our to-do lists are
tiny,
really small.
And
all of the patch notes, all those 300 patch notes have been taken care of.
Yep.
Yeah, which is nuts. And the Savannah is 100% complete.
Yeah.
And the only thing left for the bog and the tundra is these last quests and the boss side.
Can I just say how weird it was? So this is one of my cafe nights. I was over at Kayaks on the corner of Forest Park and Skinker Boulevard eating a cookie, and I finished the last story.
You're just standing on the corner?
I was just outside eating the cookie.
Just doing his daily afternoon cookie corner eat.
Finished the last story for the Savannah, like the rewrite, based on the notes that we'd taken. And then it was done. And then I was like, I just had this moment where I was like, holy shit, like the Savannah is actually done. There's nothing
to
do.
Yeah, but it's weird though, because it's such an insane culmination of a million tiny little things that you can't compare it to some like huge monumental achievement because it doesn't feel like one.
There was no cheering.
It's like what you did to finish the Savannah was you made a quest.
Yeah, you finished.
It just
you
happened.
Put in the last piece of the puzzle.
Yeah, I just clicked the update button.
Yeah, it happened to be the 200th quest.
Yeah,
but it was
is this game is literally a million components of little pieces of code, images, pixel. It's just a jillion things that all had to be done by us at some point. And so it's basically the equivalent of having literally a million piece jigsaw puzzle.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, when you put the last piece in, it's like, no more really difficult than putting in the 337th piece.
And almost nothing has changed, but now it's all of a sudden actually done.
Right.
So we're going to be hitting that. We're going to be hitting that point with the remaining two biomes pretty soon.
And I already have the first boss.
The first boss is amazing.
Seth was so excited about it.
I don't know.
I think this is the best thing you've ever made.
I don't know how I'm going to program it.
I would agree.
We shouldn't talk about it.
Yeah.
But
okay.
But it looks really cool.
I haven't even figured out what the story is yet, but it's going to be a gross.
Yeah,
one.
Yeah, because every side boss has its own quest chain associated with it for you to go and like summon it or find it or whatever. So we're coming up with these cool, or I shouldn't say we, Sam and Adam are coming up with these cool side stories to get you there. So each boss has its own like reason for existing and
it'll be fun. Cool. So today I'm finishing his attack animations and stuff and then start on the next one.
Yeah. And this boss is easily going to be one of the most complicated fights I have ever programmed. This boss is going to be way more complicated than Hugo Duco, who is the main villain, actually.
Because he's just a floaty head.
He's just a floaty head and he's got all kinds of minions that he summons. But this boss is like all kinds of crazy moving parts.
It'll be fun.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's hit some questions.
Yes, please.
Sure.
Okay. So, again, these questions are submitted by our players through podcast.bscotch.net. And you can also vote for questions. So if you want to push a question toward the top to make it more likely that we will see it or get to it, then feel free to hop in there and vote for stuff. But you do need to be logged in to your BScotch ID in order to vote. And there are no downvotes.
Oh, yeah, to vote. True.
Because, come on.
You can ask a question anonymously, but that... there's just no reason to do that.
Yeah, don't be ridiculous. This is the internet. You're already anonymous. So, all right. So our first question, Bragbirch66 asks, who out of all of you is the hardest worker and who is the slacker of the group?
I usually try to take the slacker.
Well, Sam does a weird combination of like...
I think Yeah. So yeah, Sam does the weirdest combination.
Sam
of,
will work the most, but he'll also be the laziest about it. So he'll be like, I put in a 33-hour work day today. And I'll be like, do you think you could thicken up the lines on this? No. It's done. I'm not going back and redoing that for 8 minutes.
I have a very strong... He has forward-looking bias to my life.
Yeah, well, I shouldn't say it's laziness. It's just pushing forward. Yeah.
Yeah, I have a future bias.
I think I probably have a tendency nowadays to work the least. I try to get in gym time and game time and. You know, I try to do like a good like 9 to 5 work day and try to move away from it.
Yeah, I think I just kind of get worked up when there's like a when we're close and when
Sam gets really
involved.
Stressed out about deadlines.
Yeah,
I tend to just be evenly not too stressed.
Yeah, deadlines don't bother me because I'm just like, we're not going to hit it anyway.
That's the great thing.
Keep on working, and at some point,
the great thing about being your own boss is you get to disappoint yourself endlessly. You never get to meet your own expectations.
It turns out that predicting when things will be done. It's the funny part, right? Is we never slack off with working on Crashlands. Like it's just never happened. The only time we've come close is when Sam was in the middle of treatments, and Seth and I were just like, "We need to do something else."
That's when you guys were getting moment to moment text updates of how I was near death. Which
yeah,
I
exactly.
Think probably just a little bit distracting. So right. you're excused.
Yeah, it was really inconvenient that you were almost dying. It made me sort
of slowed
stressed.
Down our workflow.
Well, from what I heard about this story, our mom, who's in the room with me, was sending text updates to Adam and Seth about how. I was basically, you know, dying. And
yeah, she was just like, Sam's fever is now 1,000,000, and he just looks like a
he looks like
potato.
The sun. He has become, he's so hot that he's formed a solar system
also,
around.
He just, like, vomited, but she didn't ever de-escalate it. And then,
yeah,
like,
no,
the
what,
next
no
test...
it was worse than that. The text updates got worse and worse and worse. Every 20 minutes for about 3 hours, we were hitting. Right. And then suddenly...
Silence.
And we were like, what? And it was 6 hours where we just nothing. And I called nothing. Called Sam's fiance, nothing. Turns out Sam was nearing death. And they were like, let's go look at some houses. And so they just right. started driving around town and turned off their phones. And they were just like looking at houses.
Which would have, you know, it would have been fine.
What we didn't know was that Sam, like, He was getting worse and worse, and then all of a sudden it was like, okay. And then he started coming back down, and everything was fine. And they're like, okay, let's go now. Everything's fine. Let's just go around the town. But they didn't update anybody that this was okay.
Well, but not only that, the like being near death thing was actually like exactly what was expected to happen. So
right.
while it's still worrisome and people have to manage it very carefully, and actually nobody was like this hospital staff and stuff weren't really worried that that was actually going to be the end, right? They were just like, well, this is the part where you're almost dead, right?
Right.
That's just part of the process. And so all the updates we were getting about how dire the situation was were basically just saying, we're exactly on track.
Yeah.
This is just how this works, you know?
But the problem was the radio silence after the most critical yeah. update, so.
Well, it's just funny, too, because our mom has a habit of, when it's time for her to give us an update, like she feels like it's time. Then she will call repeatedly until we answer.
Which seems like a big emergency.
Yeah. And so this has happened time and time again during all these treatments where all of a sudden I would get like 5 phone calls back to back. And I'd be like, oh, fuck, something really bad has happened. And I pick it up and she's like, hey, how's it going? I just wanted to let you know that Sam's fine and the treatments are fine. Everything's great. And I'm like,
people use the phone differently now than they used to, right?
You don't
call someone twice in a row unless your leg has just been eaten off.
Actually, I don't think I've left a voicemail in probably 5 years.
Yeah, I haven't.
Oh, yeah, I haven't.
And I don't think I've listened to one in 5 years. I get them because my phone is like, you have a voicemail. I'm like, no, I don't. Deleted. Anyway. Okay, yeah. So anyway, I guess we all just kind of work differently.
Yeah.
I think the answer to that question.
We all have our sort of days or even weeks of what you would call slacking, but they tend to be extremely externally based. probably a legit stuff.
It's mostly avoiding burnout. I mean, even when it's not like, even when there's not something really dramatic externally going on, every once in a while, because I tend to just kind of do this kind of a slow burn work where I just wake up and I start working, and then roughly until a little bit after my wife gets home or I go to sleep. And I just do that most days. And then every once in a while, I'm just like, fuck this. I need 3 days. And I just like am radio silent and I don't do any work and just like watch TV and play video games because like my mind is just done with that.
And you know, the nice thing about our setup is like we all respect that everybody works differently.
Yeah.
And so it's not like, fuck you, you need to be chained to your desk. You know, it's like you're getting stuff done the best you can, and people get burned out sometimes. People need breaks sometimes. And
well, it's like when Seth was talking about when Seth was scheduling his Colorado trip and for the beginning of September that he just got back from. And he's like, oh, man, that's going to be like right around something. I know it's going to be either close to beta or launch. And Adam and I were like, so?
And then it turned out to be
not better, even.
So.
Exactly. So long story short, don't be chained. Don't let your bosses chain you to the work, because
even if your boss is
I understand that in a general work environment, I understand that, you know, there's a,
I think it's a lie,
there's a desire to standardize things, right? To like to treat everybody the same, so you say everybody comes in at 8 o'clock, everybody leaves at 5,
mm-hmm.
Monday through Friday, those are the work times, those are the work days.
No, I don't think it's even that though. I think it's because you're on average, an employer does not trust an employee to actually work.
Yeah,
correct.
And so the only way that you can, so then you have to force the issue by you know, panopticoning it, right? Yeah. So it's like, I can see you. I can see you, you must be working.
Yeah,
right?
But the problem with this bizarre setup is that because you actually can't see everybody working, the metric just comes down to time. Like, you ever hear this bullshit thing where somebody would be like, oh, man, she comes in, she's always the first one there in the morning, and she's always the last one to leave. She's such a hard worker. Like, what do those two statements have to do with each other at all? All it means is she doesn't have anything going on. Like, she's not busy.
She's not going to the gym.
She's not
nurturing her soul, you know, with books.
But I guess, you know, maybe that's...
Well, she could also be doing all of those things.
She's probably just, yeah, she's sitting in her cube playing solitaire and Minecraft and shit. So,
well, I mean, I think...
Or she might be the hardest worker. Like, but
you don't know. Just because she's there doesn't mean she's doing anything.
Well, the other point, though, is that most of the research on, you know, corporate psych, which is really interesting and weird, is that people just don't really work more than about 6 hours a day. And I mean that in a sort of a
limited... I thought it was more like two.
No. The average corporate employee puts in 2 hours of work a day. Mm. But as far as like your brain is concerned, if you get 6 hours of like pure thinking,
then
and
your brain
work
runs
done,
out.
Yeah, your brain basically runs out.
Run out of brain.
Which is where the naps.
And then if you go try to play League of Legends, you just lose 6 games.
Oh my god! Don't even. So
this is actually.
Can we talk about this?
Okay, hold on. I have to say something.
What?
Because I've noticed this too. This is actually a big problem with having gaming as a hobby, is when you're exhausted, you can't enjoy it because you suck and you just lose all the time.
Okay.
Right? Well, I mean, like, you have to put mental energy into doing it. So if you have a shitty day, and you're like, I'm going to unwind with some competitive multiplayer games, it's just not going to pan out for you at all.
Okay, well, here's the backstory to this. So yesterday I woke up and tried to work for about an hour and a half. Wasn't happening. I just felt tired.
Because of your...
Probably because of
because
my
of
5 days
of your 12-day,
5-day
work day.
So...
Day.
So I was like, okay, you know, it was 11 o'clock, and I just saw the writing on the wall. So I said, okay, you know, I'm just going to take a day. It's days for me. What am I going to do today? I'm going to play some League of Legends. I'm going to crush some nerds. Proceed to play for 6 hours and just lose every single game. Just loss after loss. Also have... Perhaps two of the most negative game experiences I've ever had in my life.
Back to back.
With a group of, like, just the most toxic people on the planet. And literally got so angry that I was like, maybe I should just, you know, uninstall this stupid game. Because this is ridiculous and I don't need this in my life. So that was my day off yesterday. was actually losing for 6 hours straight. It was humbling, I guess, right?
Yeah.
I was humbled. Yeah.
Which this, definitely a mistake.
This, but this kind of brings me to think, and you know, I've been thinking about this a lot, about the idea of the way people behave in a competitive setting on the internet. Because on the internet in general, just like with nothing at stake, people are generally terrible towards one another.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. The stakes have never been lower.
Right. Like you go into a YouTube comment, somebody would be like, I like this video. And somebody would be like, fuck you. Yep. And then then you look, it's like, there's a little button. It's like, read more, 327 replies. And it's like, suddenly there's like, Jesus gets involved. And then there's like references to Hitler. And it just goes nowhere fast. And this is when all that's happened is somebody has expressed a positive opinion about a video they watch. Now when you put these same people, put controllers in their hands, and be like, now you're playing a competitive ranked match, and whoever wins gains rating, and whoever loses rating, right? So something's at stake here. And also open up chat. Give them the ability to talk to each other throughout this entire fucking encounter. Yeah. So I've been thinking about how do we do this? Because we want to move into multiplayer. Mm-hmm. But we also have a don't be a jerk policy.
And those seem like they're actually
at odds. They're totally at odds with each other. So we need to come up with a system. And they're like, we don't have any concrete ideas about this. But I would love to see something where basically at the end of a match, for everybody in that match who isn't, you know, like part of a preformed group of yours or on your friends list, basically like people who are randoms. If you either
randos,
you give them a thumbs up or a thumbs down, basically saying, I'd like to play with this person again, or I don't want to play with this person again. So the thumbs down does two things. One is you don't play with them again. You don't get matched with that person ever again.
Yeah, nice.
But also once they get a certain number of thumbs up, thumbs down, like, you know, certain thresholds for statistical, significance purposes, then you start to apply some metrics to them. Basically, like if they go below 50%, then they can no longer use chat to speak to the opposing team. Mm-hmm. Or if they drop below 30%, they get permanently banned from the game forever. Because who wants to play with that dick?
Right. Who cares?
Right? Like if only one out of three people they play with is like, yeah, I'd play with that person again. Then no. Just get out.
Trick,
get him out of
it. If it's just as simple as a thumbs down, thumb up system, then it also gets abused on the other side. Because now people will thumbs down people who are better than them.
Right.
Right. Because most of the anger is from a player who is doing worse than their opponent, and then it turns them into an asshole for whatever reason.
No, actually, most of the anger that I ever see in League of Legends is when someone on your team is performing poorly. Right. That's actually where all of it comes
from. Yeah, exactly. So, but it's a performance issue, right? It's just a player not doing that well, then they get basically harassed by somebody.
Right. So the question is, can you disentangle those things?
Right. Well, so, yeah. Can you find... So, for example, can you apply analysis to say, like, this person tends to downvote their teammates whenever they're losing?
Exactly. So you'd have to basically take a... It'd have to be a pretty high level of analysis to
do that. And it would be very difficult. And I know that Riot has... They've been wrestling with this kind of stuff forever, and they have all kinds of... They have psychologists on staff, and...
Well, so it was interesting for me because
But they started too late.
They did start too late, but I've read a bunch of their stuff because I think it's really interesting. I can't remember the guy's name is who's the PhD who's driving most of it, but...
I think it's Jeffrey...
Lin. Jeffrey or Jeremy Lin.
Jaylin.
But he has some... Jaylin. He has some... there's some interesting articles out there about their approach and stuff, but... The point for me was I never actually, because I'm generally just kind of not bothered by stuff, I just get very entertained when people get worked up, and so I've never had a problem with it before.
I've mostly found it amusing.
But this was the first time, though, where I genuinely, like, my blood was boiling. I was so infuriated. It was the first time where I was like, this game's dumb. It had nothing to do with the game. And so I didn't actually realize what it could do, because it had never actually affected me in a serious...
Were they being mean to you or to other people?
Well, both, but it turned into a targeted attack
It was a bullying, like the whole group was ganging up on Sam.
Yeah, but yeah, because this thing is like, because if you see this happening to somebody else, because like if it doesn't bother you that much, you know, because you're just like, these are obviously 12-year-olds, you know, they aren't humans yet, you know, they have whatever.
The thing is, it's probably not true though. They're probably like in their mid-20s or 30s. Statistically, you know.
Well, that's yet another group of people who are not yet humans, right? So true. In either case,
who is a human really?
People who aren't jerks, I think, is a required part of the definition. But so in any event though, because if you can just kind of handle that and it's fine because you just see it as an amusing thing being done by very sad people, right? Which is for the most part how I see it. But then you see it happening to somebody else who doesn't handle it well, right? Who like actually takes it personally. Then all of a sudden, now it's like a, you know, now it's sad and anger inducing, right? Because it's people bullying somebody who is now actually being bullied instead of people spouting vitriol at someone who doesn't give a fuck, which are very different scenarios. Yeah,
so, I mean, whenever I see it happening to a teammate of mine, I'm always like telling everybody to, yo, just relax, bro. It's fine. You used the teleport wrong. Yeah. It's okay. No one's dead. Shut up. You're doing great. You're doing great, buddy.
What I found, though, is that the only time it bothers me is when the person is so when they're obviously wrong, right? Like so if I'm playing Rocket League, I just totally fuck up a shot, and somebody in chat is like, "Wow, man, you suck," and I'll be like, "Yeah, like that was a terrible shot.
Yeah, I fucked that up."
But I had a match where it was a 2v2 match, and there were three times where I had perfect shots lined up, slamming the ball into the goal. And my teammate just flew in sideways and swiped the ball and knocked it out from going in. Right? And I'm like, okay, you know, whatever. I don't care. It's still even. We're still like 1-1 or whatever. And then at some point, he tries to make a shot, but he misses. And I knock it in for him. And he calls me a retard because I messed up his, like, I stole his shot, right?
Right.
So.
Well, just.
Yeah, because suddenly it's not about you winning as a team. It's about you getting your.
Him getting the goal, even though he didn't even have it.
Well, just a comical example of what I was dealing with yesterday. There's this character in League who, when he gets to, like, 1 HP, basically becomes invincible for, like, 6 seconds or something.
Yeah. And invincible means he can't die damage.
He can't die.
just to clarify.
And so this dude comes running up to our base, and it's just me and the base. And then he's going after this building. And so I light him up and get him down to 1 HP before he gets, like, across the threshold. And then he just walks in, because he's invincible, beats this building down.
Which, again, means he can't
die. While he's completely invincible. and then whirlwinds and goes flying out of the base into the shadows while he's invincible. And then the comment from...
You couldn't do anything.
I couldn't do it. I did all I could, which was nearly kill him.
Nothing.
Yeah. Get him to death, and then he was invincible.
And then in the group chat, this lovely person was like, what are you just standing there for when the guy's beating down the base? And I said, he was literally invincible. I don't know what it is you expect me to do in this scenario. And he's like, you could have just hit him. And I was like, you don't know what invincible means. It's not a thing I can do. And he's like, well, you could have tried. And I was like, what?
Tried
what
to do what?
And his words were, it might have scared him.
Yeah, like he's a raccoon or something.
But really, it was because this guy wasn't a good enough player to know that other player was actually invincible.
No, he must know. There's no way at that level of play.
Yeah, I mean, Sam's in like these high-ranked matches.
He knows. Like, and that's why I was so confused. Yeah. I was like, this doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
What you're saying in the rage.
But anyway, I mean, if we when we hit a point where we're doing multiplayer games, oh man. I'm not looking forward to that. But we're gonna really do as much.
We're gonna crush assholes so hard.
Be sure to quote that in context.
We're out of context, dude. However you like.
Do whatever you want with that.
Butterscotch shenanigans.
Crush assholes
so hard.
So hard.
You put that on.
Okay. Well, so let's
move on quickly. Yes. Cover this up.
All right. So the next question kind of flew off the rails on that one, but next question from Spectral Hunt. There's an underscore in there, but Spectral underscore Hunt. You guys have mentioned doubling your money in half on multiple occasions.
That's true.
Also known as just cutting your money in half. My question is, how do you guys continue to operate if only one of you is getting paid?
Well, let me hit the first part of that, which is that it's way more interesting to talk for us to talk about the times when we've cut our money supply in half than it is for us to talk about the times where we've launched games and it's gone well, right?
Yeah, nobody likes a braggart.
So you're naturally going to hear more stories about how we just generally fuck up than how we have success.
The more important lesson is that we succeeded a little bit better than we fucked up.
Right, in general.
Yeah, on average.
So to the second question, the question of operation when basically I'm the only one getting paid. That comes down to how we've set up essentially our lives and our support systems to support this insane endeavor in such a high-risk space, which is that each of us, except for me, which was the reason I was getting paid, had a support system in the background, such as a wife.
Savings plus wife.
To, right.
More importantly, a super supportive spouse.
Yeah, right. I mean, yeah. Before we started this, we all had very serious conversations with the people in our lives. And basically, said we're gonna try to do this thing, and it could take 5 years before anything comes of it.
We're pretty sure it'll work.
We're pretty sure we can do it. And they were like,
"It'll just take a while."
Yeah, and they were like, "Yeah, we think you can do it." And they had our backs, and that was it. So,
and we saved before Seth and I had left that previous company, we put basically our entire anything that wasn't spent on rent and food for me went into the bank account, and then
we scrimped. Is that the word?
Scrounged.
We slurped and saved as much as we could.
So we had prepared that, and then the other thing is that we live in St. Louis, and Adam lives in Dallas. So it's like the cost for us of being alive, we don't live on the coast, and so rent, I mean, I'm renting a one-bedroom apartment with my fiancé for $675 here, has a garage,
a month.
There's laundry in the basement, it's like a nice, I mean, it's not like a nice place, but it's nice enough.
If this place in San Francisco would probably border on like $3,000 a month or something
like that. So
you're looking at like an 80% discount.
Yeah,
it's sort of like when you're
living off of savings, then yeah, that's.
Oh, this actually reminds me. I saw there was an article about the top tech cities in the United States.
St. Louis got it.
What did that mean in that?
So they just ran a bunch of statistical analysis on things like. Like demand for tech jobs versus like how many tech workers there are. So looking at sort of like the gap there, like how many how many companies are hiring tech workers, programmers, database, you know, whatever. And then things like cost of living, general average salary for all these positions, etc. No coastal cities made it onto the list.
Whoa.
St. Louis was number 10. Des Moines was number 7.
Oh, no way.
What?
Number really? One, Omaha, Nebraska.
Yeah, they're crushing. Was Kansas City on there, too?
I think so, yeah.
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 Well, so I guess cost of living versus income potential must have been a really big factor in that.
Huge, yeah. It must be. Yeah, huge. Well, I mean, just think about it. Like, if you make 150, 200K on the coast versus 100K in the Midwest, you have so much more money left over in the Midwest.
So I remember when I graduated, they were passing around this sheet that basically showed, because, you know, When we were going through graduation, everyone's negotiating their salaries and stuff. And some of the business school professors were passing around this sort of like cost of living sheet for where you're going to know what it means to earn a certain amount of money in a certain place.
Yeah.
And the equivalency was 50K in St. Louis was equivalent to 110 in New York City.
Yep.
So they're like, you know, if you're going to this place, just know, and you better start like fighting with them to give you cash if that's where you're going. So I think,
well, yeah, and then moving costs are a lot more.
Yeah.
I mean, there are some places where there's like a straight up like 5-to-1 ratio. Yeah.
So just to go back to the question.
So money, a dollar is not a dollar.
Yeah, exactly.
It depends on where you are.
And so to go back to the question, we continue to operate by being so lean that it's ridiculous. We have very little in terms of operational costs. I mean, I think the
very low body fat too.
Nearly also skinny people.
Very lean operation. We have
nearly free speech, which is the the thing we use for the databasing. I think it's, what, like $13 a month that's been costing us or something?
Yeah, so, yeah. So far, our server costs, yeah, have been somewhere around $13 a month.
So I'll just go
to manage all of Bscotch ID.
I'll just go pick up a part-time job, work an hour and a half, and then, you know, that'll be done if we ever need more cash.
Or 1 hour if you get a decent one.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we do stuff very lean, and then you take that lean aspect along with savings from previous job plus supportive spouse, and you have a pretty good recipe for, like, we never lose money, I guess that's probably the biggest point, actually.
Also, we don't do loans.
Yes.
As in, so yeah. Like, so this is a big point, is that a lot of people will start up a company and then think, I need funding, you know, I need to go get loans, get venture capital, whatever.
That money.
I mean, we're totally independent, which means we don't have to stress about that stuff. And also, we can never go bankrupt.
Right.
And nobody gets to make a demand from us.
Yeah. So we get to make all of our own decisions, and we can just adapt on the fly, and everything is very much in our hands.
So I think that's that the fact about doubling our money in half doesn't mean that we lost all that money. It usually just means we gained half of what we should have been gaining during that time. I guess is actually the way to think about it.
Yeah, well, and I mean, so the consequence of this is that, you know, at worst we have pushed back the date at which we get the company to the point where we want it to be, which is where we all get to get paid reasonably, all that kind of stuff. But actually probably not, because for the most part in the games industry, which is hit driven, just over enough time, either accumulate enough games that are all doing okay that you then reach that point, or more likely, if I guess maybe not more likely, but with the other scenario is that one out of every 10 of your games is a real hit. And that's the point where you actually make enough money to like really live off of. And that's independent of your previous, you know, financial screw ups, like cutting your revenue in half and that sort of thing.
So there's your answer.
Yeah. Okay. Let's hit, we have time for one.
Yeah.
One more. Okay. So Nia asks, Windows versus Mac. Actually, can we do two more? Do we have time?
Can do however we want, man.
Yeah,
sure. Let's do it. Okay.
Two more.
All right, so Nia asks, Windows versus Mac, discuss. Not a question. No, I'm going to point.
So here's my other
question mark at the end of
my
this.
Bias is towards Windows simply because of the fact that I scarcely, if ever, use a Mac, and that as a person who plays a lot of games, it's harder to play games on Macs. And
it's harder to get games on a Mac.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, the design of them still bothers me. For whatever reason.
So, yeah, just the overall user interface.
I think the truth of the matter is there's not really much of a versus here. Like, it really comes, I know people get very fired up about it, but it's like, it really comes down to preference.
Well, what it really is the same. I think Seth said this a little while ago in referencing, what is it, Jimmy Kimmel, I want to say, who, you know, he has his late night show. He's been being mean to gamers recently, YouTubers in particular.
Yeah, if you guys want to watch something that's kind of cringeworthy, it's
yeah,
Jimmy Kimmel and Markiplier, and I cannot remember what the girl's name is, but
another YouTuber.
They sit down on the couch to show Jimmy Kimmel what a Let's Play video is, because he makes some sort of disparaging remarks about the concept of Let's Play.
Yeah, he was basically like, "This is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. It is dumb that people enjoy watching other people play games."
And so, of course, people in the comments section of this video basically firebombed Jimmy Kimmel. And he realized that he needed to, you know, address this, or I guess maybe the studio heads did. But the way...
Well, no, that's no, because what he did is he doubled down, because that's how you get ratings.
Right? It's making controversy bigger.
Yeah, well, exactly. And that's what, to me, it's the same thing with Windows vs. Mac. And I think Seth summed it up nicely by just, you know, paraphrasing Jimmy Kimmel as saying, you know that thing that you love? I hate it, and therefore it's terrible.
Right.
Yeah.
And for me, the Windows versus Mac discussion is exactly the same. There are legitimate reasons on either side. Really, across the board, they're both fucking terrible. And the reason is because because Windows gets its hooks into you when you're basically an infinite. It runs everything in the business world.
Right.
And so you have no choice but to become exposed to it. And in most cases, you're literally required to use it in jobs and school and everything else. And, you know, in school, they give you a cheap version of it, or free even, to get their claws into you so that you learn how to use it. And then when you go look at a Mac, you're like, I don't know how to use this. I hate it.
Switching costs.
And yeah. then Mac is like the thing that you go to if you're cool or trying to avoid Windows or whatever. But the cost of it is really ridiculous for what it is.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. And for so Mac, it's a well-made product. You pay for in like an unmodifiable brand, right? Because like when you buy a lot of Macs are like laptop or whatever, but they're pretty locked down. Yeah. You know, like if you try to like change the battery on an iPhone, like. No, it's just not gonna.
Can't even do it. Well, but that's also true of Android phones and everything else. But I mean, the bigger issue is just for like the reason I like Windows is because I need Windows to actually do stuff that I want to do. So I don't really like Windows. It just makes the most sense to use it, and then it has the extra advantage that there you're just buying the software, and you can get the most bang for your buck by building a massively powerful machine that software lives on at a reasonable cost. Which you can't do with a Mac, because a Mac, those things come together. So for me, that's the big issue there, is that they're both corporate entities that are, at heart evil because they're publicly traded. That's just how
Well, they're not evil. They're not good or evil. They just are. They exist to create profit.
Right. Which,
so in just
my opinion, is an evil purpose for existence.
It's but it's just the way. It's what they do.
All right, Bernie Sanders, relax.
But yeah, personally, I would prefer if we could all just use Linux.
Yeah, I think it'd be awesome. But nothing runs on it.
It's not feasible. So
okay, let's move on to the final question of the 20th Butterscotch Podcast.
Oh yeah, episode 20, guys.
We made it.
Pause for applause.
Applause.
Okay. Alan M. B.
Lindb.
Or his name is just straight up Lindb.
Lindb.
Lindb asks, so considering that most of your games were made with what? 12-ish hours? Does the fact that Crashlands is almost 2 years in the making mean that it'll approximately be 20 billion, give or take a couple times, better and more involved and awesomer?
Yes.
I think that math checks out, so let's not even worry about that.
Yeah, but there's an important concept to understand here, which is that of diminishing returns.
In other words, Crashlands will be like we spent 13 hours on.
Crashlands will be about twice as good.
Well, but we should take a step back, though, and say none of our published games were completed in 12 hours.
So, well, a couple of them, but then we unpublished them.
Yeah, Freeway. Yeah, we unpublished them and then spent a few more weeks, which is still not a lot of time, right? But spend a few more weeks making them good and then republish. Yeah,
Roid Rampage and Flop Rocket are the shortest ones. Roid Rampage probably clocks in at like...
probably about 2 days.
Yeah, 2 days. Of total time. Flop Rocket was probably about 2 weeks. Most of that was not spent on the game.
It was on Beast.
It was
on
Beast GD.
Beast GD took longer than that, though. But
the game side of Flop Rocket was probably about a week and a half.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Towel Fight was 10 weeks and Quadrupose was 10 weeks.
Yeah, so
the diminishing returns aspect, though, it's not even just that. It's that with those games, they were made in their entirety within that first, in terms of like the whole scope of the game and all that kind of stuff, within a few hours, right?
Right.
And then the rest was fleshing it out and making it feel good and playable and that kind of thing. But Crashlands spent, 6 months?
Mm-hmm.
Where... I mean, it didn't exist as an entire game until really recently, actually.
Yeah,
but even like 6 months into it, it was just changing all the time. It was never. I mean, you could even say actually that Crashlands as it is now took way less than 2 years to develop because most of that time was
figuring out what
trying
the hell it
was. Stuff and yeah, figuring out what it was.
Yeah,
it was more of an ambling approach.
Well, it's in large part, I would say, because all of our previous games came from game jam concepts.
Yep.
Yeah.
And in a game jam, you know what the game is. You only have...
Well, yeah, because you have to make a complete playable.
You have to make something playable in 2 days. So the first thing you do in a game jam is be like, what would be a fun mechanic to build this game around? And then you just go from there. With Crashlands, we didn't have any concept of a mechanic to build the game around. Instead, it was like, we want to build a world.
A world.
Right. In a world. So we did that, and then we were like, oh, shit, it's not fun to just, like, be in a world. Because you get to do that all day, every day, all the time, is just to be. So mm-hmm. then we had to start giving yeah. you things to do. And those things to do weren't that interesting at first. And we had to keep sort of nudging them and poking them until finally they became game mechanics. So we came at it backwards.
I mean, any of those game mechanics, though, which then, you know, Seth built into the thing. Each one of those things that are effectively the scope of one of our previous games, right? Because our previous games all basically are one mechanic.
Right. Yeah. They're built.
So Crashlands has a whole bunch of them. So basically each one is like its own thing. Each one of those, Seth probably spent roughly a day or two actually building it in the first place.
Yeah. I mean, it's as if we made like 30 games.
Yeah.
And just put them all. Because then
the rest, though, most
banner.
Of the time in Crashlands has been filling out content.
Yep.
And so yeah. it hasn't been, because the other games, it's purely about the mechanic and then adding just enough content that the mechanic is satisfying and fun. But Crashlands is about the content. And the mechanic is a way to experience the content, not so much the other way around, which is like the other
games.
Well,
there's another, in my opinion. Sam and I were talking about this the other day. There's an interesting problem with having a game that's as open as Crashlands is, that has an inventory system and all this stuff, which is, so in Quadrupus, if we were to turn around and say, what if we had like a vehicles?
Mm-hmm.
The obvious right. answer is no, like it doesn't,
right.
just no way that
where
that
would
fit. Where
are you going to hold them?
Yeah. Where are you going to, what do you, how do you get them? What are they for? Like whatever. But in Crashlands, if you said, what about vehicles? It'd be like, yeah, we probably fit that
we
in.
We could do that.
Because right. you need to go places. So that's obviously what a vehicle is for. And you also need to hit stuff or kill things. Or like, what if you could run creatures? Like, suddenly, any idea becomes feasible because right. the game isn't built around a single mechanic. And so that's also, you know, partially why it's taken so long to build the thing, because anything can happen in it. And then we have to have that conversation whether it makes sense.
We sent a note to Eli Hodap of Touch Arcade a while back and just kind of updating him on timeline stuff. And then, like, we were super excited about the time. I don't remember what the system was.
No, no, it was about the creator.
It was about the creator. And you know, super pumped about it. Like, oh yeah, you'll ever build this thing. It's this crazy modding tool. And he was like, man, you guys should just rename this game Feature Creep. Feature Creep the game.
Yeah, which is what it is. But that's, and I think probably in the future, we're going to move away from such an open game concept.
At least for a good while, we'll be back on the mechanical
train. And because, so, I mean, onto the diminishing returns thing. I mean, what this basically comes down to is the bigger a game gets, the harder it is to add new stuff, mm-hmm. because everything you add needs to jive with all the existing code and mechanics. And so the more stuff you have, the more things there are to think about and double check and test whenever you slap a new thing on there. And then B, when you have 900 things in a game, Crashlands, it has over 900 things mm-hmm. in it. One more doesn't feel like that big of a deal.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Well, and you can experience this firsthand with Terraria, right? Because in Terraria, the way that the crafting tree works is, for the most, they have a ton of unique items as well. But for the most part, what you do is progress through different, you know, tiers of minerals, basically. And each one has its own set of furniture. It has its own weapons. It's the same kind of three weapons, right? And so on. So, like, everything has the same set of stuff. But then this happens for, like, I don't even know how many goddamn tiers of content they have in that game. It's like, well, it's so like 20, Sam and I both have played that game for, you know, well over 100 hours, right?
Yeah, so the first chair you see, you're like, oh, yeah. I'm going to cover my house in chairs. I'm going to move some chairs. And then you get, then you get chair indistinct, recolored chair number 37.
Right.
Like, oh.
And for them, you know, and so for that game, like, they release, you know, these big content patches where they add literally, you know, 500 or 1,000 new things in these big content patches. But it's just 1,000 more of exactly what was already there. And there were already 100,000 things.
So the first 1,000, it's like, damn, these are some. Right. There's some nice stuff in here.
The things people always are going to get most excited about is the things that essentially add a new mechanical level to the game.
Right. Which you can only do, I mean, that's the hardest thing to do.
Yeah, and you can actually only do that so many times with a given game concept. And I think the interesting thing with Crashlands is that the concept is so open that there's still, even with where we're at, where we're calling this good, there's still plenty of, like, other crazy shit that we've dreamt up that could go into this thing.
I mean, we just added a new game system
last week. the buff system, the elixir and buff system is a totally new thing. Yeah. So there's so much room for things, but the truth of the matter is, or I guess the question really comes down to, would this mechanic be better explored elsewhere?
In its own game,
perhaps. And with a game, once you hit a game the size of what we're talking about here with Crashlands, I think our answer is, yeah, let's do it somewhere else.
Yeah, and I think another problem with this big open world concept, too, is that there was actually, I mean, even when we had 500 things in the game, it still felt empty.
Yeah.
Because of the fact that there's, like, when you have a whole world that's infinite, and you only have 500 unique right. things in it, you're just like, wait, what the hell?
You know? We crossed right. the 500 recipe line.
Yeah, now there's 500 craftable things.
Right, 500 craftable things.
Which now that feels good.
The total number of quests in just the Savannah, I think, is around 100 now. Mm-hmm. If not more, I can't remember exactly. But
but how many? I guess we should clarify though, because quests to us are like the atomic particle of a
right.
Of
so the quest as far as like story chains go, I don't know, but to be
story chains, I think there's like a good like 30, probably
something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's enough that it feels like the world is sort of lively and cool and all that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I spent my past 12 or 15 hours of work editing it and reading through it, and it took that many hours just to read through all of it.
Yeah.
Right. You know, so there's plenty.
That's not including actually having to do the quests.
Yeah, that was not around. In the game.
This
right.
is just
right.
like
that
literally was just going through the text and the stuff.
Yeah, that was in the editor, not in the game.
Yeah.
And actually, I started to do it in the game, and I was like, oh, fuck, this is going to take a long time. Yep. So I was like, I'll save that for a playthrough. Yeah, yeah. Instead, I'm going to, yeah.
So there you go, Elenb.
So it should be, it won't be 20 billion. It's not a linear relationship, I guess, is the answer. But it will be immensely more awesome and definitely at least 20 billion times more huge than anything else we've made.
But it's also going to be very different. Mm-hmm. We've never made anything totally like this. Thing. So
we're very excited for the beta.
Yeah. So, all right, you guys, well, we are totally over time. But we gave you some bonus minutes for episode 20. So enjoy those. Take them. Savor them. Put them in your pocket, whatever you do with those minutes. And we will see you again next week. And if you want to submit more questions, just go to podcast.bscotch.net.
And remember, you can find us on SoundCloud and on Stitcher and in iTunes.
That's right. So thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Goodbye.
Peace.